All right, Phil. So welcome to the show. I always love to talk a little football to kick off before we talk soccer or football, I guess, as well. So now that you're in Chicago, I'm assuming you've now become a diehard Chicago Bears fan. And so there you go. Well, all right. So you're a transplant to Illinois. So what's your team? Let's have a little minute discussion here.
Yeah. We are gonna be best friends because I am a diehard Packers fan.
Oh, all right. Well, this conversation's short because
we're done. We're done.
Been in the last decade or so against the Packers.
I will admit I'm fully bandwagon. Like the first game I ever watched was like Brett Favre Super Bowl. I think I was like 6 or 7 years old, and so. Sure. I mean, they've been the easiest team in the world to be a bandwagon fan of. So, but living up here, it's nice. It's a lot closer, right? And I got cousins in Madison. Actually, just saw this weekend. So, yeah, I'm a huge Packers fan. I'm sorry, man.
No. Hey, I get it. I mean, if I was like a blank slate, just looking to pick a team without some sort of family connection, why wouldn't you want to be part of a program that just keeps funneling superstar quarterbacks? You know, you're always going to win. And you know, they throw this kid Jordan Love out there and everybody's like, oh man, he's not going to do it. And I'm like, what do you mean? They casually just got rid of a legend in Aaron Rodgers because they knew this kid was like, of course he was going to be good. And okay. Sure enough, he's great. And he's going to win a Super Bowl there, I'm sure. And the Bears are going to hate him for the next decade. So until you guys draft some next superstar that's 10 years old right now, but he's going to be great, you know? So that's cool.
What do you think about Caleb Williams? Are you bought into the hype?
I mean, look, we have to be, we are the exact opposite of what you guys have been at the quarterback position. I mean, it has been a black hole forever and, we're the worst quarterback play in the history of the league. And so, this kid's got the most talent we've ever seen. So we have to be bought in. Chicago Bears fans aren't exactly patient. So, I'm hoping that he has a few wins early and of course playing you guys with Green Bay, that's a deciding factor. We could be 10-0 and you guys beat us, they're gonna be like, we gotta get rid of everybody, So we'll see. We'll see if the Bears fans can buy a little bit of time, give him a chance to adjust, and I think he can be pretty good. There's a lot of excitement going on, but who knows? Yeah. We gotta catch up to you guys, and now all of a sudden Detroit's good and that's not right. So it's a whole new mountain to climb, but
Did you want to hold on to Justin Fields?
As a fan, yes. He's so easy to cheer for, and he's fun and exciting. Yeah. But like, if you just watch like the stuff, the fourth quarter stuff, the bad throws, the crunch time decision making, and you're like, I get it, and when you have the number one pick in the draft and this guy that's a generational talent supposedly is around and you have question marks, I get why they made the decision. It was tough. A lot of Bears fans wanted to keep him. And I think that it's funny. The deciding factor for me was when we played Green Bay at the end of the year last year and they were cheering for us to keep Justin Fields. And I'm like, that's not a good sign there. That's not a good sign. So, and we had already picked up the number one pick in the draft at that point. I was like, yeah, he's gone. Yeah. He's got to be gone at this point. So,
I just wish you guys. Well, I guess I don't wish it, but you should have gotten more than a 6th round pick for him, right? I think that was probably the toughest pill to swallow with it.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of tells the story too. If people wanted him, they would have given more. Yeah. But also, from what I'm gathering, that they let Justin Fields pick where he wanted to go based off of the options that were out there. So,
I respect that.
There might have been a better place. Draft pick wise, but he wanted to go to Pittsburgh. Yeah. So
I respect that.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I like our GM. We'll see. It's going to be interesting. Hopefully we get you back on next year and we've actually beaten you guys once. So I'll be able to talk a little trash, but right now I've got nothing. You guys have hammered on us for a while. So,
I'm not a trash talker, so I'll just leave it at, I'm a Packers fan and we can shake hands and whatever.
That's good. That seems pretty common for Packers fans. Like, oh, we're going to beat you. Hey, take care. See you later.
Well, the thing is too, we know, like, yeah, Jordan Love might win one Super Bowl, but that's it. And then he's going to have 16 other years of failing in the NFC championship game. So, we've been beaten down in our own way. Like, I got one of my good buddies, just, diehard Commanders, right? Like, to the point he probably still calls them the Redskins, right? Just won't let go. And he and I would always have this argument about the Giants. He was like, would you rather be a Giants fan that basically you win once every 4 years with Eli Manning and you miss the playoffs every other year? Or would you rather get knocked off like the Packers do in the NFC Championship game every year? And I was like, I want to be a Giants fan.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. That's a good question. Well, me and Scott are lovable losers fans. He's a Bengals fan, and there's everybody's choosing the other teams instead of ours. So you know, it's it is what it is. But it's fun. It's that time of year where everybody's all optimistic. So we'll see. Once they start punching each other in the face and mid September rolls around, you know, I think reality will start setting in quickly for everybody. But
everyone's a championship contender in preseason, baby.
Yeah, yeah, we won the draft. Draft champs right here. So well, look, man, I'm excited you're on. You know, we were actually out there in Chicago a couple years ago, and then the next year they won the national title. So they've had coaching changes a couple years in a row, you know. So you know, Pat did a great job, built an awesome team. I think that year they went to the Final Four, and that's when he left to take the Drake job. They had the coaching change, and she won the national title in that year. Yep. And then she leaves and takes the Denver job, I believe. And now you come in. So I'm super curious, man. Couple questions. First, what's it like taking the team over that just won the national title? I mean, I took over for a guy that coached for 23 years and won his butt off. But I was here also, so it was kind of an easy transition. You know, I didn't feel like. Yeah, he's legendary, but I didn't feel like I was taken over for a legend. I was just like, yeah, I'm next up. Let's just keep the train rolling. But you're new there, and they just won the national title, and expectations are pretty high. And so, you know, what did you think of that? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, lots of different ways I could go with that answer. I think one, I mean, you talked back to like Pat Flynn and even before him, Mike Phelps. Like the program has over the last like decade. Done fantastic, right? I think like, I don't know, 7 years in a row of like the lowest we finish is Sweet 16. So, you know, it's not like, you know, they struck lightning in a bottle and this is a team that all of a sudden out of nowhere kind of won a national championship. I would argue they were like building towards it. So I think in that sense, that almost like takes a little bit of pressure off because it's not like there was like unrealistic expectations, you know, within me getting the job. I think there was, hey, this is the standard we've been at and this is the standard we expect you to keep it at, right? So I think that arguably helps that the expectations were probably somewhat realistic. And then probably the coaching changes themselves helped as well, right? Because to your point, it's not like Sitch had been here for 20 years, won a couple of them, you know, had a, you know, whatever. It was, hey, they've had a couple coaches, and that was one of the things I actually campaigned on is I want to be here. Like, I prefer the Division III model, and, you know, UChicago is obviously fantastic. We have the resources, all that stuff. So, no, I think I wasn't feeling actually a ton of pressure. The school I was at actually won the national championship at our level in 2022. We compete in the USCA, which admittedly no one's ever heard of. But yeah, they had about like 90 schools, you know, across the country that competed in it. So obviously a different, much smaller beast than 400 Division III programs. But yeah, like I was definitely coming off of, you know, being confident winning that. So, you know, I don't want to make it seem like I came in here and just expected to win a national championship. Obviously that didn't happen. And that wasn't even exactly my goal. I just wanted to keep the standards high. And you guys know winning is a byproduct. So long way of saying, actually, surprisingly, wasn't feeling that much pressure.
Well, that's got to be the absolute best way to take over a program like that. I mean, if you go in there with that pressure on yourself, I mean, who can go into a season thinking, well, I got to also win the national title. I mean, it's just got to be so difficult. You know, you also got thrown another curveball. You lost some horses a year ago. You know, you graduated some of the best players I've seen in 10 years. And so you, I mean, how many starters did you return from that national championship team?
Yeah, so the two center backs that were All-Americans and then the holding mid. So those are the three All-Americans that graduated. But everyone else did return, right? So I think, like, even going back to your first question, like, when you look at a lot of the other factors, like, it's not like we graduated 9 starters. Like, yeah, we graduated 3, and they were All-Americans and fantastic players. But, you know, we brought in a grad transfer center back from Princeton, right, to kind of fill one of those gaps. And You know, we had a sophomore that was very much ready to go. I think he played in like 9 games his freshman year in 2022, and he was easily ready to slide in. So, you know, we were still good in the back. We still had our goalkeeper that, like, you know, broke the UChicago record for minutes played. So we very much still had a lot of the other pieces. And then, you know, I still had like the same assistant coaches. My AD was like incredibly supportive and didn't put any of that extra pressure on me. So yeah, I think we were still set up in a really, really spot where, again, it's not like they won the national championship and now we were going to fall off a cliff. So,
sure.
So yeah, but no, you're right. I mean, those three that graduated were very much the spine of the defense. Right. So, you know, like I just said, we kind of had to get creative with some new pieces there. But, you know, even looking forward to this year, I think same situation we're in. I think we're returning 9 of 11 guys that frequently started. So, you know, feeling super good about this upcoming year too.
Yeah, no, that's such an excellent way to go about it. You know, good advice for young coaches that are taking over, and maybe not for a national champion, but for a program that's doing really well and you're jumping in there. It's like, hey, you got hired for a reason. And it's your turn to step up, do the job, and, you know, get the respect from the kids early and get them going. And you know, so when did you get hired? When did Julianne leave in?
Yeah, it was late. Like, I think Julianne was very much planning to come back, and then like Denver was supposedly her dream job. Like, she loves Colorado and all that. So she left in July, or like so end of June. Great. And so
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, my hiring process was literally 12 days. It was ridiculously quick. I think the AD actually responded to me on July 4th. And then I think I got offered the job on July 16th. So super, super quick interview process. And then I moved here on August 10th. And we started preseason on August 18th. So again, that was even one of the things like I campaigned on as well, was like, they just went undefeated and won a national championship. So like, who am I to come in here and change a bunch of stuff? So that's definitely not what I tried to do. I kind of told the players, like, look, I want to keep like 85% of it the same, and then 15% of it will be maybe some of my nuances and how I want to play. But, you know, we basically kept the same formation. Again, maybe some little tweaks to the system. But, you know, again, having the same assistant coaches there, like, we did keep a lot of it the same. And a lot of the early season was I was very much coming in and almost observing more than I was coaching. I will fully admit that it was a well-oiled machine, and I was just trying to keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you had the talent and the experience there to win on accident half your games, and so you know, you don't want to mess that up. And then you go from there, of course, and you throw in your 2 cents. But so, did you meet your guys in preseason, or did they bring a bunch of guys in during the interview, or were you pretty much your team when they were checking in, doing physicals and all that fun stuff?
Yeah, it was interesting. So the three captains had already been like named by Sitch during the spring. So the three captains were part of my interview process. Like, those guys grilled me for an hour. I always tell people they are actually the ones who like convinced me to take the job though. Like, going into the interview, like, although it's UChicago and obviously, you know, fantastic, I was probably like 60-40 of like, hey, if they offer me, I would take it. Cause there are all those, again, family decisions and stuff, cheese that we were talking about before this. Yeah. So, you know, there were big considerations there. But then after the players grilled me for an hour, I was like, man, if these are the guys that get to coach, like, yes, this is where I want to be. So, yeah, those guys were awesome. Really, really impressed me. And then from there, I basically spent like the end of July just doing Zoom calls with each player. And so there were, even though I Zoomed with every one of them, I will admit there were a couple guys on day one checking in the dorms. I was like, what's that kid's name again? Right? So yeah, it was, yeah, I was very much drinking out of a fire hose for sure.
Jeez. So what is your advice? Cause there's a lot of turnover in college athletics. I mean, plain and simple. Yeah. So what's your advice for kids who are out of school? I love University of Chicago. My coach leaves. I'm not leaving. You know, I want to be here. You're bringing in this new guy. I don't know who this coach Phil Croft is. What's your advice to those kids? How do they handle it? Maybe you learned something from these kids this year on how they handled it, especially with it being such a late hire and not having that spring transition period to kind of get through there. I mean, what's your advice for these young kids that are dealing with this when a coach leaves?
Yeah, it's really tricky. Like, I think your ideal situation, and we've probably preached this to kids, is like, hopefully you feel so good about the school that you're going to that, yeah, the soccer program is also almost just like an added bonus, right? But the the reality for most kids is that a lot of kids are choosing a school based on soccer. And, you know, that's an emotional decision and they're young and, you know, we all want to win and all those things. So I'm not saying it's wrong. Like, you know, I was the same way. Like I went to the one Division I school that offered me, you know, a chance to be part of a Division I program, right? So, you know, again, I think the ideal situation is, man, you love the school, right? So UChicago's great academics, you know, you're going to be set up for life, great. And I also get to play soccer at a really high level, right? So, but yeah, for the average kid, like that would kind of be my advice. Like if you know for a fact that you would not like that school without soccer, then you're, even if you play soccer and start and play 90 minutes all 4 years, you're setting yourself up to be unhappy in different aspects of your life for those 4 years, right? So, like, to be honest, my older brother went through that, and I won't name the school because there's no reason to, like, bash on them. He went to a school that was middle of nowhere, and he hated it, and he started. He played in the NCAA tournament game, and after his sophomore year, he transferred. He was like, I can't. They hung out at Walmart 20 minutes away on Friday nights, and he was just like, what, this isn't a college experience, right? So, you know, like, again, like you said, Cheese, right? There's all those situations where coach leaves, you tear your ACL, the program gets cut. Like, who knows what could happen? So, yeah, your ideal situation is you really like the school, and then soccer's an added bonus.
So do you think your brother, knowing what he knows now, would have gone through a different process? I mean, you know, I'm not going to, like, pick on him here, but I'm sure he's sitting there like, how did I not know that hanging out at Walmart was the primary social situation here? I mean, I was kind of teasing him a little bit, but this is so common, Phil. I mean, how many kids do you talk to that are, like, making these decisions to go to school there? And if you ask them just a few questions, they're just like, oh, I didn't know any of this about the school I just chose to go to. And, you know, your brother seems to maybe fallen into that line there. So, I mean, do you think he would change it? What would he do differently? I mean, what are your thoughts?
I think he probably would. You know, he played Division I as well, which, you know, most kids arguably are chasing. So, again, there's those dynamics of maybe there's a finite amount of Division I that are offering you. But yeah, I do think he would probably do it differently. I think it's one of those situations where, like, kids just don't know what they don't know. And that's why, like, I enjoy recruiting seminars and these types of conversations, because, like, we're on this side of it where we've been doing it for years. So we do get how it goes. We know what should be important. But kids show up and, you know, they get one official visit, right, per year. And so, like, consider a place like Chicago where we only have two local kids. Like, yeah, you're going to fly here. You're going to spend maybe a weekend. And based off of that, you know, 36 hours, you're going to decide if this is the program you want to be at for 4 years, right? So, right. You know, very much like we try to make sure guys hang out with their potential teammates, right? They don't need to hang out with the coaching staff for 3 hours. They need to get to know their teammates. You know, hopefully the guys can get a meal with them, maybe see the city a little bit, you know, show them the dorm room, show them the fields, whatever. But, you know, you're right. Like, I think for my brother, he probably visited. I think he did. He visited for, like, a home game, right? They probably won. He had a good experience. Maybe the guys went out that night, whatever. But he wasn't there on a Wednesday, you know, observing a class and being bored. Like, I know a coach that he was at a program where he could do this. But he gave me that advice. He's like, you should have all your top recruits visit, like, middle of the week, no home game, nothing going on, and, like, see if they actually like the place. And I'm like, that's easy for you to say. Like, most of us would really struggle with our recruiting if we did that, right? I think, in terms of, like, advice for kids is, like, you just want to ask as many questions as possible, right? Like, yeah, get to know your teammates, get to know the area, ask what they do for fun, you know, ask the coaches, like, hey, what do you do on the weekends with your family, whatever. So, a lot of times they are just being, they're of course being told good stuff. Like, we're going to paint the best picture of what our school and program has to offer. And kids are trying to kind of read between the lines and decipher. And that's where, yeah, they have to ask the questions about stuff that's important to them. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I hate saying this, but we are salesmen. We're trying to sell our school. We want you to come. And all schools have all these, you know, great things and things that they might want to, you know, gloss over a little bit. And I mean, I'm sure every school's got some stuff like, I don't like that, but I'm definitely not leading with any of that. And so, you know, that's what this podcast is for. We want people to get that education. So that when they walk in, they sit in your office, they can ask those questions and, you know, put the coaches on the spot. It's good for us. I mean, it's fine. We're going to, I know I'm very honest with the kids. And so if they're going to ask us something, I'm going to tell them what's going on, and I'm still here. So even the bad is not enough to get me out of here. So, you know, it's enough just to have a conversation. This is how we deal with it or whatever. So, there's a lot to be taken from that. And, you know, I think that your brother, you know, his words about this would be good. It'd be good to hear.
Yeah. I think it's, if you don't mind, let me just add to it real quick. Like, I just think it's, you have to look at the stuff that's going to be meaningful versus just the, like, you know, the frivolous stuff. So I think a really good example is like High Point. Like I'll give them a plug. So their coach, Zach Haynes, like great guy, I think very honest. Like, you know, if you get on High Point's campus, I don't know if any of y'all have seen it, like it's ridiculously stupid nice, right? They have a water fountain on every corner, right? Like, yeah, like every building is carpeted, right? Like they have umbrellas just sitting there for you to, like, it's just ridiculous amount of resource they have on the campus. And so Zach, when he has recruits on campus, like the kid will come in, he'll obviously be wowed by everything. Everything looks like a hotel. It's beautiful. And right. He kind of like cuts him off. He's like, yep, our campus is gorgeous. And that's the last thing we're going to say about it. And it's like, we're not talking about that again. Now we need to get into the meat and potatoes of what you're actually going to get out of this experience. And like, I would imagine like CNU is similar, right? Like, let's be honest. Like when I was coming up through BeachFC, CNU isn't what it is today. Like now your facilities are gorgeous and they've poured millions into athletics. And that's obviously necessary for the recruiting process. And that is awesome for their student athlete experience. But CNU still has to offer good programs, right? And good people and good coaches and good alumni and, you know, all the stuff that actually matters. So anyway, that's my rant.
No, you're right. I mean, the tour and pointing out all the pretty stuff, that's great. That's part of it, of course. And we're going to all do that. But, you know, we're usually dealing with really good kids, high academic kids, smart kids that are understanding that this is an investment. This is a 4-year investment that I need to make, and I need to make sure it's a good one. And so you have to have those other answers. You have to have the other solutions there. So I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, this is kind of a 2-part question there. So you showing up when you did in August, and I think you have a pretty early timeline with your recruiting, much earlier than all of us. So, first of all, what was that like? And then maybe also explain what your timeline's like with admissions, and, you know, you have deadlines that a lot of people don't deal with, and, you know, stuff that maybe the general public wouldn't understand.
Yeah. I did figure that was going to be a challenge. Like, fortunately, I love the recruiting side. You know, there's probably not a day that my staff doesn't talk about it, even in season. It's just, you know, it's kind of always going, it's continuous. So that was very much one of the things right away. It was like, yeah, where are we at? How many kids have we already committed? All that stuff. So yeah, for our timeline, for, you know, for all the high academics, so, you know, us, Ivy, Patriot League, NESCAC, whatever, like we're all going to be looking up to finish our classes before the ED1 deadline, right? So basically before November 1st. So, you know, a lot of times UChicago does have their class done by like a September timeframe. And that's obviously, like you said, that's super early compared to a lot of schools, just the reality of it. But yeah, so when I came in August, we had 2 kids that were committed to that point. And then from there, it was, you know, yeah, assistant coaches, show me other kids you're talking to. I'll bring in, you know, kids I know. Like, we did end up signing 2 kids from North Carolina that, you know, I was already kind of aware of and stuff. So, you know, as you know, it's all about the connections and reaching out to people. And UChicago, fortunately, does a lot of the recruiting itself, right? Like, kids are reaching out and we're their top choice without them even having a conversation with me sometimes, right? So, you know, it probably should have been a much bigger challenge than it ended up being, if I'm being completely honest, because we still were able to hit that time frame where, like, I think our last kid in the class committed like October 14th or something like that, and almost every other kid was in like September. So yeah, it gave me about like a month to have conversations, plan visits, catch up with kids the assistant coaches were already talking to. But yeah, we were able to put it together really, really quickly, which was very fortunate.
Yeah. And that's, and just to kind of compare to what most of the rest of the country, and I'm not even talking about Division 3, even Division 1, that is, I mean, we went to Greer down in South Carolina in December, and, most of us, Division 1, Division 3, most of us weren't done, you know, the academics were, and the tippy top of Division 1 probably was, but I was sitting next to a lot of Division 1 programs, and they were still recruiting kids in that class. And, that is super common. Historically, we're usually wrapping up around the holidays, but this year everything was very pushed back. It seemed like the COVID craziness was winding down, and all the rosters were starting to settle. And just, there was a lot of just question marks, it seemed like. And then the big one, and I'd like to pick your brain on this one, the financial implications. What a nightmare that was. So with you committing these kids, I mean, what was it, 6-7 months before the government figured that some of these things out. Yeah. So what was that like? Did it really hit you guys that much, or did you guys have a pretty good program in place that helped out and, you know, kind of go from there?
Yeah, I mean, we're very fortunate that our financial need-based aid is awesome. So, like, we do have a couple kids that don't pay a dime for a UChicago education, right? And they might be first-gen kids and things like that. But the vast majority of our kids are full pay, and, you know, their parents have done really well. And so, obviously, we're very fortunate to have that. Where, yeah, I'm trying to think back to our 2024 class, like, I mean, there might have been like one kid that their parents really asked about the finances, and the rest were just like, great, our kid's got an opportunity in Chicago, no problem, boom, done, we're signed. So yeah, I think we just got really fortunate with that. Normally that very much is a conversation, and hey, let's get some numbers back from financial aid and do some phone calls. And, you know, we have the net price calculator online that most schools have nowadays, where if you're honest about your tax information, then the numbers will be accurate back to you. But yeah, so no, we got super fortunate, because you're right. Like, even the school I was coming from, Johnson and Wales, like, yeah, the coach that took over, I mean, he was my assistant, right? So we were still doing phone calls and stuff. And he was like, man, I can't get anyone to commit before January because we're all waiting on FAFSA. And then it got pushed back again. So yeah, that was really, really tough. I just think UChicago being where it is financially, I think a lot of parents know it's going to cost a lot. So a lot of times those are the kids that, you know, are maybe kind of already reaching out to us first that are on our radar.
Sure. I mean, if you know what you're getting yourself into academically at University of Chicago, then I'm sure you understand the financial implications there. And yeah. They may not be reaching out unless they know that they may fit into a program that you just talked about, how you had a first-gen kid or different kids that fit into certain programs that allow you to go there for free. But I'm sure most of the people that are like, all right, look, we've been saving for this. This is where we're at. Yeah. If this is what works out, then so be it. We know what the sticker price is, and we're prepared for it. So
yeah, it is so interesting though, and just, you know, like general advice for kids, like you really never know what a school is able to offer, right? Like we all do our financial packages differently. So, you know, I think I'll hear it when I hear from like international agents, right? They're like, oh, like, you know, Division III, you guys don't have athletic scholarships, so that's not going to work for our kid. And I'm like, well, actually, our financial need-based aid, we've had some internationals, including the All-American that graduated in 2022 that came here for free. So, you know, there was a kid in my last program that he did end up signing, and he was valedictorian for his school. And, you know, at that school, the most amount of money he got for his academics, it was about like a half ride. And his mom, like, could not get over the fact that, like, my son is a valedictorian and we're still going to pay like $20,000. For him to go to school. Like, how is he not getting a full ride somewhere to also then play soccer at the Division III level? But that was just that school, right? Like, you know, other places do right? Yeah, different academic money and stuff like that. So the only reason I tell that story is, like, you know, for any kids that are listening to this, like, I wouldn't say write a school off until you know for sure, right? Like, you can make a call to the financial resources. You can at least ask the coach. I always tell kids, like, if a coach reaches out to you with a personal email, you should at least hear them out. Because even the program I played at, so I played at Mount St. Mary's up there in Maryland. Like, yes, it was the only Division I school that I had an offer from. I also knew nothing about them until they showed up to a showcase. And I was like, oh, well, let me hear about this school. And I ended up loving it. So, you know, there's 1,200 men's soccer programs in this country, right? So, you know, you have no way to hear about all of them. Yes, we know about the ACCs, whatever, but you know, you should very much hear a coach out, and you might be pleasantly surprised, right?
Yeah, and you're right. And there are so many programs within the schools too that you may qualify for. We went down to Trinity, and I mean, they have an awesome soccer program. And I'm talking to the head coach down there, and I'm asking him about these kids that we had just played against the night before. And I'm like, where the hell did you get that kid? I mean, and he's like, well, you know, we have this international program. They put me in charge of it. So I flew down to Brazil to a soccer school and picked up some kids. I'm like, all right, that must be pretty nice. And then another year we went down there again, and there was this kid, and yeah, they just have incredible kids there all the time. And I'm like, this is the best kid I've seen in years. I mean, what's the deal? And he goes, well, he qualified for four or five of our programs, and Division I's were all over him. But we were able to offer the best scholarship. He was paying like $2,000 to go to school there. And none of the D1s could match a full ride basically to go to their school. So he chose his best financial option, which was a Division III school. And you're right. There's so many different programs out there. I mean, you kind of mentioned a couple. Do you have any outside of, you know, maybe need based? Do you have any programs that a kid could qualify at Chicago and would help them out financially?
So need-based aid really, really is it. Like every now and then a kid will ask, like, hey, is there academic money? But because it's UChicago and every kid getting in is a 4.0, like really isn't, right? Like, I kind of joke, like, unless you have a 1600 SAT and have already like sent a rocket to space, you're not going to get any academic money from us, right? So, but again, most schools do have some sort of academic money. And yeah, there's so many stories I could tell. I got a good buddy who coaches at Division II that the most amount of aid goes to their graduate students. So he's like, I run it like a JUCO. I just bring in 2 graduate students every 2 years and that's it.
Wow. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, so now that you've been there and, you know, you had a spring season, finally, you're able to do that and go through that route and join the summer and you're deep into your recruiting class right now. What kind of run us through that? How's recruiting going? Have you been jumping into the ID camp system? We just had a big podcast yesterday. We talked about ID camps. I know nice. That there's, soccer masters or something like that, which are high academic. I'm assuming you guys have been or could go or get invited at least. And so what does that look like for you guys and how important are ID camps for you guys?
Yeah, ID camps. So we've been very fortunate. I think we're going on 4 years in a row of signing a kid that has come to our ID camps. And obviously that's over multiple coaches, right? So this is my first summer of camp. So we historically have only held them over the summer and we kind of treat them almost like last evaluation opportunity for kids, right? So they're very much are those kids that I'm inviting to come to camp because I really do need to see them like one more time. This is our only opportunity to see them in person, right? You know, maybe they're not an MLS Next or an ECNL kid, and, you know, we can't fly to every single showcase at every level. So, hey, I need you to come to camp to give you an evaluation, right? So, yeah, our ID camps are very important. Again, that's going to be very hit or miss per school, right? You know, even so, like we... You know, I'll give like the good and the bad, right? So like we had a freshman wingback that started for us this past year that apparently was not on the coaching staff's radar until he showed up to June camp the year before, right? Ended up starting for us as a freshman. So there's those stories. That's fantastic. The reality is, yes, we signed a kid from our camp. We also have like 200 kids that come to camp over the summer, right? So 1 out of 200 kids. So yes, we recruit from our camps, but that's the reality is all of our recruiting classes are small. So yeah, we're not going to take 20 kids from every camp, right? And that's obvious once you actually think about the numbers. But yeah, long story short, we very much do use our ID camps. We don't go to too many other ones. I know our women's coach goes to Soccer Masters because it is high academic, like you said. I am going to go to Notre Dame's ID camp this year, you know, another high academic institution, so that should help. But I know, yeah, a lot of these high academic D3s, like they'll go to Stanford's camp, you know, they'll go to whoever. To try to help increase their chance of getting kids for sure.
Yeah, I mean realistically if they're writing you, they're also writing 20 other schools that are just like the Johns Hopkins, ESCAC schools, you know, Division I schools that fit your criteria. And so and there's a lot of them and you have to recruit the entire country. And so I'm a Virginia State school. It's cheaper for Virginia kids to come here. We're popular for Virginia kids. So that's kind of my niche. You are recruiting the entire country and maybe then some. So how do you battle that? I mean, what does that look like for you? And I'm sure you had some experience anyways at Johnson & Wales. You may have done that a bunch. So, you know, what does that look like? Kind of what's your niche? And when you're planning out your recruiting, this is how I attack
it. Yeah, I mean, it's... You know, I always say that, like, I don't think recruiting is easy anywhere. Like, I think every single place has their woes. And I kind of learned that early on. I think, like my first year at Catholic, I was going down and, you know, working UNC and NC State camps. And, you know, I'm talking to those coaches. I'm like, oh, you're NC. UNC, you probably get any kid you want, right? And he just looks at me. He's like, no, because the kids also want Clemson, Wake Forest. And, you know, and they're like, we have to battle with all these guys, right? So... You know, every place very much does have their niche. I mean, for us, it's obvious, but it is the high academic, right? So as soon as a kid reaches out, we do have to look at that and see, like, yeah, number of APs. Is this going to be a test optional kid? You know, have you knocked it out of the park with your test scores, all that stuff? So, yeah, academic is very, very much first lens. And then, you know, for us, where we are as a program, like, we are fortunate that we're on the ball a lot and, you know, tend to outshoot opponents and things like that, you know, however boastful that sounds. And so like the attacking lens is normally the first thing I look at, right? So there are those kids that, you know, is like a right back that's just like a lockdown 1v1 defender. And I'm like, man, this kid is so good, but he's just playing right back in a four back and you never really see him in the attacking half. And like, I don't know if that would be good for us where we are as a program, right? So, you know, by all means, we will have to pass on good kids, which every program does from time to time, but Yeah, it's an interesting beast. It's definitely the first school I've coached at where I would argue the large amount of our recruiting comes from kids that reach out to us first, right? Like when I was at Johnson & Wales, it was very much, I was going to the showcases, I was reaching out to 40 kids that I liked over the weekend, and, you know, let's hope 20 of them respond, right? So yeah, it's a different beast. It's fun, but the recruiting piece I think is so fun at every school. Cause again, yeah, you find your niche, and I think kids all over the country are open to a lot, right? Like you might have a kid that's like, hey, I really want to do stay in state, right? Maybe it's a Virginia kid, or I want to stay close to my family for whatever reason. That's great. But you know, there's also a lot of kids that are like, hey, I want to get out of this area. Like Florida, I've always choked about. It seems like every kid wants to get out of Florida. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, the state's just so long. Their entire league is just Florida teams, right? Like, I've always had success recruiting from Florida everywhere I've been. They're just like, right. Yeah, tell me about the rest of the country, right? So, you know, I do think there are definitely some coaches with defeatist mentalities that think like, oh, you know, I'm not even going to go for that kid from California because it's so far away. That kid might have an aunt and uncle that lives in your city and you don't even know it, right? So I think it's worth, like, yeah, any kid you think that's good, might as well try to go after him, right?
Well, what's the worst case scenario is they don't answer? I mean, that's one of the things that I've tried to tell kids, because I try to be as honest as I can through the recruiting process. We recruit a lot of kids and, you know, it's I'm going to make my decisions and I'm going to be honest with you. And it seems like kids are afraid to tell me when they've chosen a different school or they're not interested. It's like, please tell me so I can stop calling you and I'll call this other kid that I also really like and I'll put more focus on him. And so just be honest with us back. I mean, that's good advice there for sure. Sticking into the recruiting, we're going into a new year here with this pairwise thing, this kind of transition here. And we've kind of figured out what we're dealing with. I say kind of reluctantly here, because I feel like we're not going to truly know for 2 years, for, you know, till the end of this year, I guess, would be the best. But I mean, are you already making your 2025 schedule? I'm assuming, you know, maybe you've already received your UAA.
Our 2025 schedule is done. Yeah. Which, yeah, again, just, yeah, it's you, Chicago. It's not me. So,
sure.
Yeah. 2025 was, you know, a lot of returns and everything from this year. We admittedly kind of play a lot of the same opponents every year. Like the previous coaches have very much built the program on strength of schedule. So like, we're going to play Calvin, we're going to play Wheaton, we're going to play, you know, St. Olaf and Gustavus. We always open with, right? Yep. So a lot of their schedule is the same, and we're just picking dates for the next year, right? North Park, Kalamazoo, whoever else. So yeah, our schedule for 2025 is set. You know, with that being said, I have definitely talked to some coaches, and, you know, some coaches are dropping some games, and, you know, I've kind of heard that strength of schedule is going to be devalued a little bit. I don't know how much. Right. So yeah, I do think it's going to shake things up until everyone figures it out, right? That's our job as college coaches. It goes back to recruiting. You figure out your recruiting niche, you figure out your scheduling niche, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. The problem with that is you just said it, you've already booked 2025. Yeah. And for those of us that haven't completely finished it, we will before 24 is over for the most part.
Yeah.
And so, you're talking, by the time we figure out exactly what this is, we really can't implement it until 2026. And so, you know, it's going to look interesting. I'm super curious to see what the bracket looks like this year, the NCAA tournament. And, I'm glad you brought up some good teams there. You opened up with St. Or did you open with St. Olaf?
We open with Gustavus Adolphus, and then St. Olaf is the next game. So that's our opening weekend.
This past season when they won the national title, was that the same schedule?
Yeah. We always do Gustavus first, then St. Olaf.
Gotcha. So how was that? Because they didn't know they were going to be national champions last year. So technically, you had both national champions from the last 2 years on the field. Yeah. It had to have been a heck of a game.
Yeah, it was. So yeah, it was second game of the year. So we tied Gustavus, like played really, really well. And then went into St. Olaf 2 days later. That was actually, I think you guys probably got hit by it too. There was like the big heat wave that came through, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I had to play early, whatever. Or shoot, I did flip it up. You're right. St. Olaf we did start with this year. You're right. I'm sorry. You know my schedule better than I do. So St. Olaf we opened with
it right before.
Yeah, you're right. St. Olaf we opened with Gustavus. We had to play at 9 a.m. on the Sunday to beat the Heat. But anyway, So St. Olaf was, I mean, for me, new coach, right? We went through preseason and we actually only ended up playing one preseason game because of the Heat. We had to cancel another one. So, going into it, And yeah, it was a very back and forth game. Like the game probably could have ended like 6-5, and you know, we won 4-2, and there was a stretch in there in the second half for probably like 15 minutes where we were just under it and they probably could have scored 3 more goals. So yeah, it was very back and forth. Like we scored a goal in like the 89th minute to really kind of seal the deal at 4-2. But yeah, both teams just had like a ton of attacking power. And I've said this like publicly multiple times, like I give all the credit in the world to Justin, their head coach, because he's a first year head coach there. Like, yes, he'd been their assistant for a couple of years, but first year head coach, he's a young guy, right? And they play a very, very tough opening schedule where they start 1-3, right? So they played really, really tough opponents for this first four games. And then for him to be able to then flip that around and then they don't lose another game the rest of the year is incredibly impressive. So, and I told him that before we even played in the tournament. Like, literally, you know, we're hanging out at midfield talking about the game while teams warming up. I'm like, dude, no matter what happens today, like, I just want you to know I'm impressed. Like, I'm a fan, right? And, you know, obviously he knows now that I was sincere about it. We've talked much more since the national championship. But yeah, no, they were very, very solid. Like, they, you know, they had a big center back. You know, they played an attractive style. They played a three-back system. They were good in possession. They had, you know, maybe arguably the best center mid in Division III. They just, yeah, they could do a lot of things really well, and they just knew how to win games. So yeah, very, very impressive season for them.
Yeah, we're going out to Ohio this year to play Denison and Kenyon, and Travis was there at St. Olaf, and a ton of what happened there, and I hung out with him a little bit here at the ECNL in Richmond, and man, that guy's going to win his butt off at Kenyon too. I mean, that guy, he knows what he's doing, and he's going to bring in some kids. So I'm hoping I can get him this year before he loads up and brings in like a. You know, these 20 kids, and I'm like, where'd you get that kid from? You know, just like the training situation. So, yeah, I'm going to get after him, try to get him this year, but, you know, we'll see. It's interesting. The strength of schedule conversation, I truly believe in it. We actually had the number one SOS this year. I just think it's the best thing. When I go into the NCAA, it's like, all right, well, okay, it doesn't matter who you throw at us. We played something like that. So we feel like we're ready. And that's what scares me about this new thing. It's like, man, if they really devalue it, it's gonna hurt. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I still believe that everybody's gonna say, like, well, you need to play the best to be the best. And you know, if I miss a tournament because of it, well, then we weren't gonna win at all anyways. If you know, hopefully it's the mentality I can maintain. But
it's not at that point. Like I mean, I'm with you. Like, again, yeah, we played a super hard schedule too. I think last year we played 9 opponents that were either ranked or made the NCAA tournament. So yeah, I mean, we've always relied on the strength of schedule as well. I think I'm with you. Like, you need to be battle tested going into the NCAA tournament, right? Like, yes, you obviously need to get there first, but like the one constant is if you win your conference, you're in, right? So it's like, yes, that's easier said than done. Like, we didn't win our conference this year. Emory did, right? So it's easier said than done, but you know, there's still that like cheat code to get into the NCAA tournament. And then from there, I mean, I'm with you. It's tough. Like, you know, you do always hear those teams of like, yeah, we went, you know, 15-0-1 and we didn't get in. It's like, yeah, but you played a cupcake schedule. So to your point, you probably would have lost first round anyway. But I don't know. Yeah, we obviously hope that the right teams still get in, and you could argue it'll be less subjective now. So, you know, maybe that there's something to it there with, you know, human bias. But yeah, hopefully it only devalues it a little bit, right? Because I fear for the schools that aren't in popular areas, right? So like, I won't name any of them, but if you're in this middle of nowhere place and all of a sudden people have to fly to play you or take a 4-hour bus ride, and like, who's going to want to come play you if you are a top ranked team, right? So we'll see. Hopefully it'll be all right.
Yeah, well, that's got to be the big concern across the board. I mean, look at the schools out west and the battles that they've been dealing with in that region. We were just out in Colorado this past year, and I was talking to their coaching staff. They're the only, I didn't realize this, they're the only team in that time zone in Division III. The entire time zone of the country, they're the only school that plays soccer, that plays women's soccer. And their women's team is Division I. So I don't even know if there's a women's program that's even in that time zone at all. And so, yeah. I mean, talk about the challenges that they have to deal with. And it's a good school. They went to Elite Eight this year, and they have a good program. But, yeah, what I mean, just different beasts. So, well, talking schedule here, you're saying you're playing a lot of repeat opponents. You play an awesome – I mean, the UAA is incredible. Yeah. I mean, your quote-unquote worst teams, the teams at the bottom of your schedule, they can beat anybody in the league. It's just – it's nothing but good schools. It's a cool conference. I got to be honest with you, when we've had some conference difficulties, they were asking questions like, can we call the UAA? I'd love to be a part of that. I mean, that seems like a neat adventure. So, you know, talk about the UAA, and I mean, you have to discuss that in recruiting, I'm sure, because kids, they're going to miss classes. They're going to be gone a lot. You're going to be on some flights. So talk about the UAA scheduling in general, but really tie it in with the recruiting side of that. And what you can tell these boys.
Yeah, Emory would really appreciate it if you guys joined so they have someone close to them.
Count us in, man. Count us in. We're a 10-hour bus ride, but we have some easy flights to and fro. So
You guys are still doing the coast to coast?
Correct. Yeah, and I don't know for sure, so I'm not trying to get in trouble with anybody, but I think that there's some talks of some schools in Texas joining us. Hopefully we'll know more soon. We don't know.
But the UAA is awesome. I mean, like you said, the conference is great. I think, like, historically, we're getting like four teams into the NCAA tournament. And again, maybe that changes now. I don't know. That'll be interesting to see. Yeah. But even like on the women's side, I don't know if you guys knew this, 7 of the 8 teams in the conference got into the NCAA tournament. So, wild. I think the UAA on the women's side had like the number like 1, 3, and 4 teams in the NCAA or something like that. So, hugely strong conference. I think when we played Rochester, they were ranked number 12. I think Emory was ranked like number 6 when we played them. So, really, really strong. And it is fun. Like, it does tie into our recruiting, in terms of like taking flights and all that stuff. I think that's exciting to do every now and then. And so, yeah, we get to fly for typically like 2 to 3 games a year. So that's really cool. And then in terms of missing classes and everything, I think the majority, basically every school in the UAA is high academic, right? So we are strategic about that. All of our conference games are on the weekends. You know, we do typically play at a time where, again, no one's being asked to fly out Friday morning at 9 a.m., right? The game will be later on Saturday or Sunday morning or whatever it needs to be. So yeah, we don't miss too much. Like every now and then we might have to leave early on a Friday. But I think like even this past year, we literally only missed like one Friday of classes. So all that to say, like, the conference is smart about it. You know, yes, academics come first, as they should at every school. And yeah, we're not actually not missing too much class too often.
Yeah, and that's huge. And I asked that question because I knew that you guys were strategic about it and took care of it. Yep. But you must get that question all the time, because I get it, and we fly by choice. You know, I don't have to fly. We did this year for a conference tournament, but we do it by choice. And I could miss more days of school than you if I'm playing a Wednesday and a heavy Wednesday schedule and 6 of them are on the road. It's like, well, I got to pull you out of school, especially if these games are 4 or 5 o'clock, like you had mentioned, and 3-hour drive. So yeah, every school does this. They're good about that. I mean, I'm imagining that you guys have plenty of great agreements with your academic side. All of your sports are having to deal with this. So it would be a major problem at Chicago and all of our schools if we were poor with, you know, the academic and athletics relationship. I mean, it has to be super strong for schools to survive, especially the athletic departments. But, I mean, I'm excited about this upcoming season. You're bringing in a bunch of players, or you're bringing back a bunch of players. I mean, you have another tough schedule. So, kind of give me an outlook. Give me what you're thinking. And, what are we going to see each other in the 16s? I got to get there, though. So maybe we'll come to you, or you owe us, actually. We were out there 3 years ago. So it's time for us to host that beast you guys have. And I'd love to have it. So
we won't get into how the NCAA decides who flies where for NCAA. Oh, yeah, no, we won't get into that.
Bad conversation.
I got a funny story I'll tell you offline about that. But super excited for the upcoming year. And as we joked, every team is contenders in preseason, but we feel really good about it. I think, on paper, we're returning, I think, 9 guys that consistently started for us, with that. Still have a really strong freshman class, where we could have 2 to 3 of them start. We also had a really strong spring with some guys where we might not even have to start any freshmen, right? So, no, we feel super good about it, feel good about the strength of schedule. Obviously, this is year 2 for me, so, there's things like building the system and my familiarity with opponents and how things go and all that. So, yeah, I think no reason to not be excited. We do have a couple grad guys, fifth-year guys with experience and all that. So, yeah, no, super excited about what year 2 is going to be like. I mean, yeah, can't think of anything negative to say about it. I personally hate the summer times. It's like the one time we don't get to coach. So I just can't wait for August to get here.
Yeah, I was joking with my wife. We start our camps, youth camp next week. And then we have another one like 2 weeks after that. And I told her that the month of July feels like Sunday as a grade school kid for me. Like every day I'm like, I know it's right around the, I know it's here, but it's not here at all. Yeah. I, it's a, I'm supposed to be off, but all I could think about is like, all right, well, what's going to happen? My guys aren't even around. Like I'm not going to see them for another month, but all I could think about is putting all the pieces together and starting it up. And we're very excited too. I hope we get to run into each other, man. That means sure. We're making a run. And it wouldn't be opening weekend. We just talked about that a little bit with the flying. There's no way we play the first weekend. So we can pretty much guarantee that. So if we're playing each other, that means we're in the final 16s or four better. So and this year, the final four is in Las Vegas. So that is an exciting thing. Scott's already got a hotel booked. He's going to do a big match play thing there, whether I'm there or not. So
that's awesome.
He's going to do
awesome.
Wise here. But Scott, you got anything there? I felt good about that.
I feel good, man. Like you said, man, if we could meet in the tournament at some point, I would absolutely love it. Y'all got beautiful facilities. We got beautiful facilities. It's a win-win situation.
I think our girls played yours. Oh no, they were at Case. I think they were at Case West a couple years ago.
Yeah. They played, that sounds right.
The year that they won the national title. And they always talk about how they were not the better team against you guys against the girls team that day. I said, yeah, I mean, I'm sure every national championship has a game where they're like, yeah, we probably shouldn't have gotten past that one, but we did. I mean, I would imagine. I don't know.
Sports.
I haven't won one yet, but when I do, I'll give that team credit when we should have lost to them. So
awesome.
Yeah, man. Well, Scott, you got anything for us? Oh, so right now there's just a blank when you talk in the recording. Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah, I mean that was great, Phil. I thank you for hopping on. And are you got any more recruiting coming up? You got any trips, or is it dead for you right now?
I think my assistant's going to go to Surf Cup. I think that's the last one we'll get to kind of consider 2025 recruits. So yeah, I think I'm home now, and we got two more ID camps. But yeah, summer is just full planning mode at this point.
Any chance you come out to Richmond for the ECNL? Was it Final Eight, whatever they are?
I don't think so. I was there for the Richmond showcase, but I don't think I'll be able to make it. I'm assuming you guys are going.
Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely go. It's easy. So I wasn't able to go to San Diego. I'll probably do that next year, though. That was great. But well, great, man. Well, thanks a lot. Yeah. Thanks for hopping on. And good luck this year. Not too much good luck. So, at least good luck until we see each other. We'll shake hands.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah, man. Good luck to you as well. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks.